he said evenly. I pulled my hand from his and faced the photograph so he wouldn't see the tears filling my eyes. I didn't want his sympathy, but I could feel him study me as I admired his work. When did you take this picture? He chuckled. 2 years ago. I gave him a sidelong glance. What's so funny? He dipped his head, hiding a smile. I bet you have a story for every picture. He rubbed his jaw. Yes, I do. I waited for an explanation. He watched me with a secret smile. I folded my arms. One of these days, I'll get that story out of you. His eyes crinkled. I hope you do. He glanced around the packed gallery. The noise had risen, more boisterous with the free-flowing champagne. I saw Wendy with a tablet, hurriedly tapping her index finger around the screen with what I assumed to be an order. Ian leaned close to my ear. Anything I can tempt you to take home? You. The thought stormed into my head and brought an image of Ian kissing me. My face heated, and he quirked a brow. I blinked rapidly and cleared my throat. You know which one I like. The corner of his mouth lifted slightly. Billy's sunrise. Sorry, but I don't have enough spare change. Happy birthday, Amy, Nadia announced beside me. I jerked in her direction. Ian stepped back to widen our circle. Nadia offered me champagne. I groaned, taking the glass from her. She handed another to Ian. Today's your birthday, he asked. Tomorrow, actually. I gave Nadia the evil eye. I was hoping you'd forget. She lifted a glass from a passing tray. A toast to the birthday girl. Stop! Let me have my fun, she griped. Happy birthday, Ian toasted. Thank you. He kept his gaze focused on me over the rim of his champagne flute as he drank. Hiding a grin, Nadia hummed into her stemware, her eyes jumping from me to Ian. Wendy approached. Sorry to interrupt, but I need to steal the main attraction. Ian set down his glass on a nearby high table. Don't leave without saying goodbye, he said, as Wendy whisked him away. Nadia tracked their departure. Damn, he looks good. Too bad he had eyes only for you. I mean, they were glued on you. I felt like the third wheel on my townie. Your bike has only two wheels. As I was saying. She chin-pointed across the room. I glanced over and saw Ian surrounded by a small group of admirers, looking at me. A hint of a smile appeared before he glanced away, his attention turning to the man beside him. Toward the end of the evening, Nadia found me admiring Billy's sunrise. Gorgeous, she murmured. Hey, Mr. Property Broker and I are grabbing a bite to eat. Join us? So I can be the third wheel on your townie? Not a chance. She laughed. It's not like that. Uh-huh. I'll walk home. Don't be silly. I'll drop you off. I'll walk with you. Ian's voice brushed over me. Nadia grinned. Even better. Do you mind? He asked me. If it's not inconvenient. He shook his head and tugged at his collar. I need the fresh air. Then it's settled. I'm off. Nadia hugged me and shook Ian's hand. Great show. Give me a minute. I need to let Wendy know I'm leaving, Ian said when Nadia left. While waiting, I took a final long glance at my favorite piece. Someone had turned the photograph away from the window to face the gallery interior. The price tag had been replaced with a new one, the word sold written in bold black lettering. Ian returned. You look disappointed. Why so glum? I pointed at the tag. I'm happy you made a sale, but I'd be lying if I told you I wasn't a little bummed. He spied the tag. Interesting, he murmured as he rested his palm against my lower back and ushered us outside. Which way? 8 blocks that way. I motioned to our left, then unfolded the wrap around my shoulders. Any plans for the big day tomorrow? he asked as we walked. I shook my head. Staying home, maybe dinner with some friends? I spent my 29th birthday hiding from crocodiles in the Everglades. I laughed. That's not my idea of a good time. I took some amazing pictures, though. Let's see. He scratched his chin. On my 30th, I spent the entire day on the back of a mule in the Andes of Peru. Let me guess, you spent the night sitting in a bucket of ice? He laughed. No, but close. My ass was sore for a week. We crossed the street and walked another block. Any more birthdays I should know about? Or do they stop at 30? That's all for now. He directed us into a dimly lit alcove. What are we doing? Celebrating your birthday. He held open the door and followed me inside. We were at La Petite Maison, a French restaurant. He held up two fingers for the hostess, two for coffee and dessert. The hostess led us to a small table beside the lace-trimmed front window. Ian pushed in my chair for me, then whispered to the hostess before she handed us menus and left. I glanced at the white-clothed tables and crystal lanterns delicately linked overhead. For some reason, I don't picture you eating here often.
Never been here.
He turned in his chair and checked the space around us. He had a wicked grin when he looked back at me.
Not my first choice, but it's open.
He glanced at his watch.
It's almost 11.
The waiter arrived a few moments later with our coffees. This smells good. My eyes drifted low as I breathed in the warm, roasted aroma. Ian sipped and shrugged.
It's okay.
Not up to your standards. No, wait. I held up my hand. You can do better. I shook my head. I don't know, Ian. All this talk and no action. His eyes brightened. Our bet's still on, he reminded. Actually, I ran my hands across the table. There have been some developments on my end. He quirked a brow. The coffee shop idea has been, I paused for effect, percolating. Nice, he grinned.
Are you going to lease Joe's?
Maybe. I gnawed my lip. Ever since Brenda's call, I deliberated asking Thomas to co-sign, or perhaps Nadia and Kristen should Thomas decline. If Joe had refused me, other leasers would too.
I wish you the best of luck, Amy. Let me know when you're ready to find out who's the true brewmaster between us.
Does he honestly think he can brew better coffee than me? I thought, recalling our conversation at lunch earlier this week. Definitely, I agreed. Our waitress returned with a red velvet cupcake. A single lit candle flamed in the center. What's this for? I asked.
Your birthday. Make a wish.
I smiled and closed my eyes, picturing my cafe with the logo painted on the sign above the door. Then I opened my eyes, and right before I blew out the candle, James popped into my mind, along with the words the psychic had once told me. He's still alive. I sputtered and coughed. Ian pulled the candle from the cupcake.
Uh-oh, your age is showing.
A short time later, Ian walked home with me, and when we reached the porch, I thanked him for the cupcake. The porch light gave him a mysterious quality, highlighting the sharp angles of his face. A day's growth dusted his jaw.
I enjoyed tonight. And,
he flashed a smile,
I think I'm going to miss you.
He ducked his chin as if caught off guard by the revelation.
Really? Why? I leave in a few days for a photo expedition.
The keys rattled in my hand. How long will you be gone? I asked softly.
10 days.
My mouth twitched. That's a terribly long time.
An eternity, he teased.
He stepped closer to me.
I hope to see you when I get back.
I'd like that. I had fun tonight.
Me too. He brushed his fingers across my cheek. Maybe Joe's Coffee House will be on its way to becoming Amy's when I return. My cheek felt warm where he'd touched me. Maybe. His gaze lowered to my mouth, lingering for a brief moment. A small gasp escaped my lips. He chuckled softly. Good night, Amy. Good night, Ian. I watched him jog across the street. As he rounded the corner toward downtown, I touched my lips. Ian had wanted to kiss me. Chapter 8. James and I had been thick as thieves, closer than conjoined twins, since that first Saturday morning. After we iced his lip and he helped clean the mess Robbie and Frankie made of my lemonade stand, James spent the rest of the day with me, and almost every Saturday afterward. We were best friends who shared their dreams one moment and pelted each other with Nerf darts the next. "We're getting married after college, and we're going to have 3 kids," he once announced, while we played Nerf tag with Kristen and Nick in the open reserve behind James's house. Then he told me he wanted to be a famous artist while I stayed home and baked. And baked and baked and baked until my hips grew too wide and I couldn't fit through the doorway. "Say what?" I had gasped and charged at him. He dropped to the ground, hugged his belly, and laughed. "You're going to be just as fat as me," I said. "If we're married, I'm going to make you eat everything I cook." I stood over him, aimed and fired, nailed him in the middle of the forehead. Then I ran, ducking behind a felled tree, and giggled. No matter how hard I tried, I couldn't picture James fat. My favorite afternoons were rainy Saturdays. James came over after his football games and crashed, exhausted, on the couch. He skimmed through the comics while I read books, our heads resting on opposite ends. We didn't move until Mom's baked goodies lured us into the kitchen, our stomachs rumbling. By James's 12th birthday, I had known him for almost a year and had yet to be invited over to his house. No girls were allowed inside until he started high school. A stupid rule, James often complained with an eye roll, but one he obeyed. He'd seen the welt on his older brother's backside. Thomas had invited a classmate home to study for an exam. Their father, Edgar Donato, had arrived home early and didn't hesitate using his belt on Thomas after ordering the girl home. Girls and hobbies were distractions. Academics and athletics provided the foundation for the skills needed to carve their marks in the world. His parents had their sons' lives all planned out. I'd selected the perfect present for James, something I knew he wanted but wouldn't think of asking for from his parents, and wrapped it carefully. The paper crinkled as I knocked on his front door. Today was his party. Only boys had been invited, but I wanted to give him my gift. I couldn't wait for him to see it. A boy I hadn't met before opened the door. He was taller than James and older than Thomas, but his coloring was the same. Dark hair and eyes, an olive tint to his skin, hinting of the same Italian heritage. He must be Phil, their cousin. James had told me he visited frequently. Usually when Phil's dad, James's uncle and Mrs. Donato's brother, traveled for business. Uncle Grant was constantly flying out of the country. James was never happy when Phil came to town. He spent those days at my house, often leaving long after the streetlights came on. But Phil smiled down at me, and he seemed friendly. "You're James's friend, Amy, right?" he asked. I nodded. "Is he home?" "James? Door!" he yelled into the house and turned back. "Sorry you can't come to the party. James's dad has this dumbass no-girls rule. He really wanted to invite you." My eyes rounded. "Mr. Donato?" He laughed. "No, silly James. I'm Phil, by the way." "Hi." I rolled up on the balls of my feet and back to my heels, anxious to see James. Loud footfalls resounded in the hallway. Then James squeezed between Phil and the door. "Hey, Amy," he said, right before Phil wrapped him in a headlock.
Phil gave him a noogie.
Happy birthday, little retard, Phil said in a Muppet voice.
He sounded like Kermit the Frog, and I giggled. James squirmed from Phil's hold and shoved him.
You're the retard, retard.
Hurt briefly sharpened Phil's eyes. I wondered why the put-down bothered him when he just said the same thing to James. But then James spotted the present in my hands. I grinned and showed him the wrapped package. It's for you.
Cool. Tell Mom I'll be right back, he said to Phil before leaping off the porch.
I started to follow, then turned around. Nice to meet you.
You too,
Phil grunted and shut the door.
Hurry up, James shouted. I have only 35 minutes before the party starts.
He sprinted into the backyard and jumped over the waist-high gate, separating his property from the open reserve.
Your cousin seems nice, I said when he helped me over.
He's not, James remarked, bolting into the woods before I could ask if Phil had ever been mean to him.
Did he bully James? Maybe that's why James punched so well.
Wait up,
I huffed, chasing after him. The gift's contents rattled, echoing off the oak tree canopy. He slowed, jogging alongside me.
Let me carry it for you.
He reached for the box. I twisted away.
No, it's your present.
What did you get me?
He leaped over a small log.
A football?
You already have one. He jogged backward.
A Steve Young jersey?
Lame. I pushed by him and marched ahead.
Let me see.
Nope. You have to wait. We had a spot, a circle of logs where we often met Kristen and Nick and plotted our next adventures. James jumped in front of me and snagged the gift from my hands.
Give it back!
He raised the box high over his head.
You can't open it yet.
What if I want to? It's my present.
His fingernail plucked at a piece of tape.
Fine, go ahead.
I crossed my arms and pretended I didn't care.
Really?
He gave me a skeptical look. He'd been teasing me. But I couldn't wait any longer either. I'd been dying to see his reaction since I spotted the item at the art store. I moved closer. Dry leaves crackled under my shoes.
Yes, really.
He tore off the paper and stared at the wooden box in his hands.
What is it?
Open it.
He kneeled and set the box on the ground, flipping the brass latches. The lid creaked open. His eyes widened and mouth fell open. He ran his fingertips through the brush bristles and rolled a paint tube, burnt sienna, in his palm.
You got me art supplies?
I tugged my sweater sleeves. Maybe I should have bought the 49ers hat Dad suggested.
You said your parents wouldn't buy you paints, but that doesn't mean I can't give you any. Besides, how do you expect to be a famous painter if you don't have any paints?
He grinned.
This is cool.
Thanks. My chest swelled, and a smile bloomed on my face, the nerves gone. I hadn't been wrong about the gift. He gave the box a quick inspection before upending the supplies. Brushes, paint tubes, and palette knives dropped onto a bed of pine needles. He converted the box to an easel and propped the canvas board that came with the set onto the ledge.
What are you doing? I asked when he squirted a glob of blue paint on the palette board.
Painting a picture for you.
Now?
He didn't answer, his attention glued to a squawking blue jay protecting her nest from a squirrel clinging to the tree trunk. He painted the scene, his inexperienced brushstrokes already showing signs of promise. As I watched, I became as enraptured with his painting as him. In that moment, there wasn't anything that mattered but James's artwork, until a voice off in the distance penetrated our world. My head snapped in the direction it came. Your mom's calling for you.
James stilled. The brush tip hovered above the canvas.
Color drained from his face. We'd forgotten the time. He moved the wet canvas aside and we hurriedly collected supplies scattered about the ground, tossing them into the box. He closed the lid and flipped the latches.
Hold out your arms.
I did, and he carefully balanced the canvas on my forearms. Watch out, the paint's wet. I repositioned my palms underneath to create a flatter surface. It's for you. He kissed my cheek, lips lingering on my skin. I inhaled a short breath, surprised at the contact that felt just as nice as it was unexpected. It left a fluttery feeling in my belly. He grinned. Let's go. I followed him back to his house. We walked as fast as we could without risk of damaging his first painting. Mrs. Donato waited for us on the back deck. Her eyes narrowed on James, taking in what I only now noticed. Paint splatters on his forearms and shirt, dirt stains on his knees. Her gaze dropped to the wood box. What is that in your hand? James quickly glanced at me. He tried to hide the box behind his legs. Paints, he admitted. Paints, she repeated, and her lips thinned. Paints are messy and childish. They're a distraction, a waste of time. She tugged his shirt where a blue thumbprint stained the collar. I see you've already been wasting time. Best you understand now, James, that there's no room in your future for frivolous activities. She looked at me. I'm guessing you gave him the paints? I nodded. Too intimidated not to. It's a sweet gesture, dear, but he can't accept your gift. James, please return it or I'll be forced to make you toss it in the trash. But are you arguing with me? His gaze dropped to his feet. No, ma'am. I grabbed the box from James. I didn't want his mom throwing it away. Mrs. Donato moved to the door. Come inside and clean up. Change your clothes. They're filthy. Hurry up. She barked when James stalled, tossing me an apologetic look. Your guests arrive in 5 minutes. James practically ran into the house. My heart clenched over his disappointment. He really wanted the art supplies. Go home, Amy. You can see James tomorrow. Yes, Mrs. Donato, I glumly replied. Tears burned, and I swiped them away before they leaked. Carefully walking to the side gate, I held the box and balanced what I thought could be James's one and only painting. His passion snuffed before any chance to glow. I tried working the gate latch, bumping the box around in my struggle. The lid popped open and dumped the contents. I sank to the ground and started picking up brushes and paints. A pair of loafers stopped by my hands. Phil lowered to his knees. He tossed a palette knife into the box. Sorry about my mom. I lifted my head. Your mom? He dropped his chin to his chest. I mean, Claire. She's pretty much my mom because she's all I've got. Don't you have a dad? He nodded. I don't see him much. He works a lot. Anyway, in case you haven't noticed, Claire wants James and Thomas working at my dad's company when they grow up. James painting pictures isn't part of her plan. I looked at the scattered supplies, money I'd wasted. I should have bought the hat. What am I supposed to do with all this? Phil studied James's bird and squirrel chase. He's pretty good. Maybe you can keep the stuff at your house and he can paint there. Claire and Edgar don't have to know. He zipped his lips and tossed aside an imaginary key. I won't tell if you won't. I liked his idea. We shook hands and finished cleaning up. Phil handed me the box. Hold it flat, like this. He laid the painting on top of the box. Now you won't drop it. I slowly stood. Thanks. I see why James likes you. You're sweet. I ducked my head, blushing. He opened the gate for me. Maybe I'll see you tomorrow. I liked Phil. He didn't come across as the bully James described. Maybe, I agreed. But I didn't see Phil the next day, or any other day for several years. James always came to my house, more frequently than before since I let him keep his art supplies in my room. As his skills improved and he acquired more supplies, my parents cleared a space for him in the sunroom next to the kitchen. Over the years, while I helped Mom craft new recipes for the restaurant, James painted, and his talent and our friendship flourished. Chapter 9. The next day I dressed in skinny jeans, a filmy blouse with thin straps, and heels for my birthday celebration. Kristen and Nadia were taking me to Chinese for dinner. Nadia hugged me hello when they arrived at my house.
I shouldn't have bailed on you last night.
Mr. Commercial Property Broker didn't pass inspection.
He was a dud.
She screwed up her face.
He made a pass at me.
I laughed. That's not good.
Was he a lousy kisser?
Kristen asked. She moved into the main room and stood beside the dining table. Nadia rolled her eyes.
No and no,
she said to each of us.
He was good.
Too good.
He's married.
Kristen looked up.
Ouch.
Wasn't he wearing a wedding band? I spun my engagement ring.
Nadia scowled.
No. Kristen studied the paper she held.
How did you find out?
I had breakfast this morning with Wendy.
God!
Nadia groaned.
I couldn't shut my trap about him, so Wendy told me.
She flopped into a leather chair and crossed her ankles on the ottoman. He asked me to submit a proposal for a commercial site he owns in San Jose, near the arena.
Before or after he made the pass?
Kristen asked. She put down the paper she held and picked up another piece covered with penciled notes.
Before, I think I'll pass on him.
She waved a hand.
I mean, the offer.
He's probably not the most trustworthy person.
What's his name?
I asked out of curiosity.
Mark Everson, tall, blonde, and gorgeous.
She smacked her palms on the chair arms.
That sounds so freaking cliche, but it's true. He's older, mid-30s.
Wendy was surprised when I told her. She thinks he might be having issues with his wife.
I snorted.
You think?
I don't mean to be rude and change the subject, but are you opening a restaurant?
Kristen waved the paper she held. Stacked on the dining table were my research paperwork, business forms, and quotes from vendors I'd worked with at the Goat. I walked to her side.
I'm planning to.
At least I hoped so, assuming I found a cosigner for the lease, but I wanted to get my numbers in order before I approached Thomas. I'd get only one chance to pitch my idea.
Oh my gosh!
Kristen squealed. Are you serious? I love what I've read of your notes. Your ideas are fabulous. Nadia stood and crossed the room. She pushed the papers around and picked up a list of menu selections. I'd been toying with recipe combinations, fusing diverse tastes to create exotic flavors. My coffee selection looked like a wine list at a restaurant. I'd have to trim the options, perhaps make several seasonal menus. Nadia flagged the paper.
You're really going through with this? From scratch?
Yes, I am. She studied me.
Well, it's definitely better than lamb stew and red potatoes.
I took the lists from her and even the stack, tapping the edges against the table. If my parents had sold the Goat to me, I wouldn't have much leeway with new dishes. New World Fusion wouldn't go over well at an Irish pub.
Now you're talking.
Kristen patted my shoulder.
I'm glad you're taking this step. You're moving on.
Nadia glanced around the room, her gaze landing on the framed pictures of James and me crowding the mantel.
Tell us how we can help. We can pack James's belongings if it's too difficult for you to do alone.
There are some good charities where you can donate his clothes. We can help find one that has a good cause. I can also assist with the restaurant design, and I can recommend a good contractor.
I clasped the paper, wrinkling the edges.
Thanks for the offer, but I need to find a site first.
Her face lit up.
I can help with that too, and I won't charge for my work. I'd planned to ask for her assistance to design the space, possibly to co-sign the lease if Thomas wouldn't, but I hadn't expected her work pro bono. Her offer was huge.
I'd love your help, but don't worry about James's things. I'll take care of them.
Like later, such as when Lacey and that business card she'd slipped into my wallet no longer niggled the back of my mind.
All righty. Kristen piped up. Looks like there's more to celebrate tonight than your birthday. Who's ready to get this party started?
After dinner, we went to Blue Sky Lounge in downtown San Jose. Electronica music pulsed, vibrating the air. People swayed on the dance floor, limbs entwined with their partners. Nadia led us to a group of chairs circling a low table she'd reserved and ordered a carafe of sangria with a round of passion fruit champagne shots. While nursing her sangria, she made sure the shots kept coming for Kristen and me.
Once we finished the first carafe, Kristen grabbed my wrists. Come on, birthday girl, dance with me. She dragged me onto the dance floor. Heated bodies plastered against us. Kristen hip-bumped me and I laughed. She yelled in my ear, You look happy! I am happy, I shouted back. I was reconstructing my life and myself, and I felt good. Several song sets later, I waved my hand in front of my face. Sweat dripped between my breasts. Water! I shouted over the music. We returned to our booth as the waitress arrived with a fresh sangria carafe and another round of shots, which Kristen and I quickly consumed. My head lulled. I rubbed my face, trying to wipe off the fuzziness. What did you think of Ian's show last night? I squinted at Nadia. His photos are incredible. Ian's incredible. A silly grin pillowed my cheeks. I knew it! Nadia snapped fingers in my direction. My smile turned pensive. He's leaving for a photo expedition. Will you see him when he gets back? Kristen asked. I shrugged. Maybe. My brows bunched, my mouth forming a tight circle. Ian remarked he'd miss me, but he hadn't asked for my number. I hunched back in my chair. I don't know how to contact him. Nadia replenished my drink. Wendy has his number. I'll get it for you. A sudden lightness had me straightening in my seat. Ian's fun. I had fun with him. I grinned stupidly from a combination of excitement and alcohol, and Nadia laughed. I can tell. She winked. My gaze dropped to my drink, and I watched the ice bob in the glass. They floated like tiny islands, and it made me think of James's body, floating in the water. The body Thomas had brought home, and wouldn't let me see. The big, fat check Thomas had conveniently given me at the funeral. There were also the missing paintings. I narrowed my gaze on the melting ice. Something wasn't right. I jerked up my head. Kristen and Nadia were discussing one of Nick's cases. He was a business litigation attorney, and Kristen was relieved the case had been resolved. Nick could finally rest. They could plan the vacation they'd put off for 8 months. I yawned and watched people on the dance floor, or tried to. My eyes blurred, and the floor listed to the left. Or maybe I was the one leaning. Couples undulated to a frenzied rhythm. Through the turbulent wave of swaying hips and limbs, one blonde woman stood in the center, her lavender blue eyes locked on me. Lacey. I blinked, and she disappeared. I scooted to the edge of my seat and caught a glimpse of blonde hair and a green shirt. She was moving away. I scrambled from my chair and tipped Kristen's glass. Red liquid and ice spilled to the floor. She gasped and jumped out of the way. I murmured an apology and weaved around the chairs. Where are you going? Nadia called out. Restroom, I shouted the excuse. I had to catch up with Lacey before I lost her. I pushed through the dance floor, stepping on toes and shoving among humid bodies. Curses trailed me. Lacey remained elusive until I saw the ladies' room door open. She'd gone inside. The door slammed behind me. Remixed music piped through the speakers. Two women, their faces heavily made up, hair tousled and skin tattooed, primped before the mirrors in the restroom's lounge. Another woman washed her hands. She gave me a cursory glance through the mirror and left. I stood in the space between the sink counter and stalls. The restroom was practically empty, which was odd, considering the line usually spilled out the door. Lacey wasn't here. I'd lost her. Spying the toilets, I scooted into a stall. When I finished, I washed my hands and glimpsed Lacey's reflection in the mirror. My skin pricked. She kept her gaze plugged into mine. I couldn't look away or turn around. Her lips moved and words whispered in my head. James is alive. I vigorously shook my head. He still lives. Prove it. He isn't dead. If he was, you'd know it. You'd feel it. Don't you still feel him? I did. His voice in my head, his touch in the breeze, his laugh in the scattering of leaves on the ground. But that didn't prove anything. In the mirror, Lacey remained motionless, unblinking.
I weaved and grasped the counter to steady my balance. My palms were damp, and moisture beaded on my upper lip. I shot a glance at the door, willing someone to walk inside, to tell me I wasn't having a crazy moment, that Lacey wasn't really here, locking me in a psychic trance. My feet wouldn't budge. The primping women on the other side of the restroom put away their makeup and left without looking my way. The door closed behind them and a hush fell across the room, as though all noise had been sucked out with them. For an instant, Lacey and I seemed separated from the rest of the world, hovering within the vacuum of space. No sound existed. Then suddenly the noise returned, powering back into the restroom. Air vents hummed, music played, water flowed from the faucet in front of me. It also felt like something else had come inside when the women left, forcing its way into me as one thought. James isn't the missing person. You are. I was sent to find you, Lacey said. My head pitched back. The overhead spotlights pierced my pupils and I blinked repeatedly. Images flashed in my mind like slides clicking on their reel. James underwater, bullets zipping past. James struggling to stay afloat in the churning seawater. James collapsed on a beach, his face battered and bruised, and a woman hovering over him. Her raven hair draped his face. Espresso eyes burned with concern. Lips moved, asking his name. He didn't know. James! I wanted to shout, your name is James! I felt lightheaded and dropped to the floor, my head connecting hard with the tile. Stars flashed overhead until they faded. The last thought to cross my mind before I lost consciousness was that I drank way too much sangria. Wake up, Amy! My cheeks stung and my head was on fire. Hello, wakey wakey! Smack! Pinpricks sparked across my cheekbone. What happened to her? Came a voice I didn't recognize. Is she okay? Came another. Someone had one too many. That was Nadia. I smiled. I think she's coming around, she said. It's her birthday, piped in Kristen. Murmurs of understanding echoed around us. Feet shuffled away, the click of heels on tile. I heard doors slam and toilets flush. Reality returned. Aw, crap. I was in the women's restroom, passed out on the floor. Ew. I blinked and squinted at the lights overhead and four sets of eyes staring back at me. I groaned. What happened? We were hoping you could tell us, Nadia said. I shook my head, memories fuzzy. I wonder if there was MSG in our food. Kristen pondered. We'd eaten Chinese. I was allergic to MSG. It made me lightheaded, but I'd never fainted. The menu said no MSG added, Nadia informed. Too much to drink. My head screamed. Whether from alcohol or when my skull tackled the tile, I didn't know. I raised my arms. Help me up. They pulled me upright, murmuring for me to move slowly and easily. The two strangers hovering backed away. I leaned against the counter and glanced around. The restroom was packed with a line crawling out the door, like it should have been earlier. Lacey was gone. Had she ever been here? My head throbbed. I pressed at the knot on the back and whined. Nadia frowned. Do you think you have a concussion? I'll be fine, I bit out through clenched teeth. I didn't want to spend my birthday in a hospital. I wanted my bed. Can you take me home? She handed me my purse. I'm staying with you tonight, just in case. We left the restroom and walked through the lounge. My skin rippled, ruffling the fine hairs on the back of my neck. I glanced over my shoulder. I didn't see anyone I knew, though I sensed Lacey nearby, watching me. Chapter 10. As she'd promised, Nadia stayed with me through the night, lying beside me in bed. She woke me every hour until I smacked her with a pillow at 5 a.m. and dragged myself from bed to sleep another restless 4 hours on the couch. We were walking zombies the next morning, her from lack of sleep and me from a hangover. She left early in the afternoon after I promised to call if I had any lingering headaches. She would force me to the clinic. I agreed to relax over the weekend, occupying my time with old movies and business plans. They kept my mind off the bizarre incident in the bathroom. The sane part of me knew Lacey had been a hallucination fueled by a deep-seated desire for James to still be alive. Still, those images of him on the brink of death, almost drowning, haunted me. There had been too much blood on his face and sand plastered in the deep gashes across his cheek. I kept telling myself they were an illusion. They had to be an illusion. It pained me to think otherwise. I shuffled through my notes on the dining room table and admired the cafe's logo. An outlined coffee mug under a heart-shaped swirl of steam with the words Amy's Cafe. James's last piece of artwork. I pictured the cafe's color palette, pumpkin, mahogany, and eggplant. Ian's Belize sunrise would be a perfect display on the cafe's wall. I wondered who'd purchased the image. And then I wondered about Ian. Where was he? And did I cross his mind? Would he take another picture like the one I loved? I studied the sketch again and scratched the pencil through the word cafe, so it simply read, Amy's. Ian had called my cafe, Amy's. I tasted the word on my tongue. Amy's. Let's grab a bite to eat at Amy's, I said in a happy voice. Amy's has the best coffee. I smiled. I liked the sound of it, simple and memorable. The doorbell rang and I jumped in my chair. I stole a glance out the front window on my way to the door. A taxi cab was parked in front, and Ian waited on the porch. Seeing me in the window, he waved. Heat inched up my chest and neck until my cheeks bloomed crimson. I swore, my hands fluttering to the wild mess piled on my head. Grimacing, I knew it looked like a bird's nest, about as neat and tidy as the rumpled pajamas I'd been wearing since I came home stinking drunk the night before. I glanced longingly toward my room. No chance to change and no chance to hide. Ian had already seen me. Thank God I'd been sensible enough to brush my teeth. And I'd done so only to wash out the vomit. Opening the front door a crack, I popped out my head, squinting at the glare of the setting sun above the rooftops across the street. Fun night last night. I grunted. What are you doing here? He shifted, rubbed the back of his neck, and motioned toward the cab. I'm on my way to the airport, red-eye flight to New Zealand, and I forgot. He scratched his head. I arched a brow. I forgot to, He blew out a breath and yanked his phone from his back pocket. His mouth twitched in a shy smile. Can I get your phone number? My pulse fluttered. The first thought through my head was that I'd saved Nadia a phone call and my own embarrassment. She wouldn't have to bug Wendy for Ian's number. I pushed the door wider and held out my hand for his phone. He'd already opened a new contact page, and now he watched me as I added my name and number. Then, before I lost the nerve, I also added my email and street address. His crooked smile grew into a full-fledged grin when I gave back the phone. He tapped a finger to the screen and held the phone to his ear. I heard my phone ring from where it rested on the dining room table. Ian rested a finger against his lips. "Don't answer it," he whispered. Then inhaled. Hi, Amy. It's Ian. I had a great time with you at my show and an even better time afterward. I leave for New Zealand tonight, but won't be gone long. May I call you when I get back? He looked at me then, brows raised in question. He nodded, inviting an answer from me, and I felt my chin dip in reply. His eyes lit up. Great. I'll see you then. He ended the call. Now you have my number. I laughed. He tucked the phone away and placed a quick kiss on my cheek. I gasped softly, startled. See you in 10 days. He bounded down the porch steps into the taxi, waving before he sank into the back seat. My hand lifted as the taxi sped off, a slight smile teasing my lips as I returned inside the house, breathless. The whirlwind that was Ian had left my head spinning, and not from a hangover. I lowered into the chair I had vacated, my smile broadening, as I sorted through the paperwork. By Monday morning, the headaches were gone, and I'd pushed Lacey to the back of my mind. My week was booked, meeting suppliers. I had appointments to inspect potential sites, even though my heart was still set on Joe's, and I still needed to call Thomas. Hopefully asking him to co-sign wouldn't be asking too much. As I gathered my paperwork and keys, the doorbell rang again. Through the peephole, I saw an older man with white hair and a thick stature. He wore a short-sleeved shirt and khaki pants. He pushed his hands into his side pockets as he looked across the front yard. I opened the door and he smiled, exposing a row of tobacco-stained teeth. I recognized him instantly. "What are you doing here, Joe?"
"It's been a long time, Amy."
He held out his wide palm and affectionately clasped mine with his other when I shook his hand.
"How have you been?"
"I've been... okay." He nodded.
"I hear you're opening a restaurant."
"Actually, it's a boutique coffee shop and gourmet eatery, but I need to find a space to lease." The fact that his leasing agent hadn't recommended me hung thick between us.
"May I come in?"
"Oh, yes, sorry." I stepped aside and opened the door wider. Joe ambled over the threshold, his blocky frame a presence in the small room. I closed the door and watched him glance around, his gaze lingering in every corner. He looked at James's paintings on the walls, the framed pictures on the sideboard, and the engagement portrait over the mantel, before his gaze settled on me.
"Your parents told me what happened. I'm sorry."
I took a deep breath and nodded.
"James was a good kid. I liked him."
"Thank you." He picked up a picture of James and me taken on the day he'd proposed, almost a year before. I was showing off my engagement ring. Joe frowned, and my breath caught in my throat. I wondered if he was noticing from the photo how the thickly applied makeup hid the cuts on my cheek and the bruise on my chin. Joe returned the frame, adjusting the stand so the picture didn't topple. He shoved his hands back into his pockets and faced me.
"My wife died 5 years ago."
"I remember." Joe had taken some time off. The service at the cafe had faltered, and he was unable to recapture the momentum he'd once had. He'd lost many customers. They found other restaurants and drive-through coffee shops preferable. They'd chosen convenience over nostalgia.
"It took a long time for me to feel any semblance of normal again."
He shrugged his shoulders.
"I still miss her."
My heart reached out to him. I knew exactly how he felt. Hollow and incomplete. Loss left an empty cavity in the chest. I cleared my throat, blinking back tears. "Do you want some coffee?" He exhaled.
"Yes, please."
I indicated the couch. "Make yourself comfortable. I'll fix a new pot." I swiftly retreated into the kitchen and, gripping the counter edge, took several deep breaths until the burning behind my eyes and in my throat that arose from the ache of loneliness diminished. I ground a mixture of beans, samples I'd received from suppliers I was considering. I set up the coffee maker's brew cycle. When I returned to the front room, Joe was flipping through one of James's old Runner's World magazines. He tossed the magazine on the table when he saw me.
"My doc told me I need to exercise."
I handed him a mug. Steam wafted upward, a roasted hazelnut scent. "Walking is good."
"I walked here from downtown."
He sipped the coffee. His eyes widened.
"This is good."
He drank again.
"This is really, really good."
"Thank you. It's a custom blend," I said shyly. He raised his cup in my direction.
"Remember to put this on your menu. I'll order one every time I come."
I smiled. After years eating at Joe's coffee house, he might now be my customer. "I'll remember." He finished the coffee and set down the mug, rubbing his palms over his thighs as he settled farther into the couch.
"I closed the coffee house because I couldn't compete. Those damn chains serving their shitty..."
He cleared his throat behind a fist,
Yeah, sorry. They took my customers away. What makes you certain the same thing won't happen to you?
I'm not certain, I said honestly. But I don't plan to compete with the chains. He shook his head.
You'll go out of business within a few months.
Hopefully not. It's my intention to offer something different, more like a coffee experience. The corner of his mouth twitched.
A coffee experience?
For people who appreciate specialty coffees, mine will be handcrafted and slow brewed, like the blend I made for you. I pointed at his empty cup. He chuckled.
It's very good.
Thanks. I grinned. I still need to create a full menu, confirm suppliers, and more important, I ducked my head, looked at the hands clasped in my lap. Find a location.
I know your parents, Amy. I've known them for a long time. They're good people and very good business people. I was surprised when they sold. I thought you'd inherit the restaurant or buy them out.
Me too, but I wasn't about to confide my parents' financial issues. Starting my own restaurant is better for me. It's something I need to do. It was what James had wanted me to do. But also, I had to prove to myself I could do this on my own.
I know you applied to lease my building.
Yes, but... He held up his hand.
My agent couldn't recommend you because of your credit issues. Yes, I'm aware of that too. I also understand what you've been through this year. I understand why things fall apart, how bills aren't paid and life stops. I've suffered too. Listen.
He set down his mug and leaned forward.
Now is when you pick up the pieces.
That's what I've been doing, sir.
I couldn't. And I lost more than my wife.
He cleared his throat.
I'm accepting your application. My place is yours.
My mouth fell open. What about my credit?
Bah, forget the credit.
He slashed his hand in the air.
You messed up. I want someone I can trust. I know you, and I know your parents. I wanted a 15-year lease, but I'll give you 5. If you go out of business, then you won't be obligated for the remainder of the lease. If you want to renew our contract, we can renegotiate the terms. But I promise not to charge you more than the original lease, even if the market goes up.
He rubbed the side of his nose. I could only stare and nod as he continued.
It's customary to give a new tenant 1 to 3 months free rent during build-out. I'll give you as long as you need, rent-free until the day you open, even if you take a year to remodel.
I blinked as my brain tried to compute what he'd offered. Why are you doing this for me? He grinned. There was a gleam in his eye.
Let's just say you have people looking out for you.
My back straightened. Did my parents put you up to this?
This has nothing to do with your parents. This is between you and me. I need a tenant, and you need a site. So what do you think? Do we have a deal?
This was crazy. The deal seemed unreal. I stared openly as Joe grinned back at me. His hand hovered between us, waiting. I restrained myself from leaping into his arms. Instead, I smiled and clasped his hand. We definitely have a deal. Joe stood, and I followed him to the door. I felt like the luckiest person alive, and I told him so.
Good. You're going to need all the luck you can get. Everything at my place is falling apart. It's going to need a lot of work.
Chapter 11. Oh my God, this place needs a lot of work. Nadia dragged her finger across the counter and held up the tip. It was covered in a thick layer of greasy dust. She made a squeamish face. It's disgusting.
It's charming in a time-warped American graffiti way, Kristen said. She gave me a thumbs up.
Dad stared at the high ceiling. Exposed wires hung where tiles were missing. Other tiles were cracked or water-stained.
It has potential.
See, exactly, I agreed. Nadia retreated to the kitchen. Are you considering a lease? I've already signed one.
She stopped mid-stride.
What?
When?
Last week. Joe and I had spent several days going back and forth over the terms, finally settling on an agreement Friday. I'd picked up the keys from him the following Tuesday. It was now Saturday, the first day I could get Nadia, Kristen, and Dad to meet me. Mom was at the GOAT, overseeing the pickup of furniture she and Dad were donating to St. Anthony's. Dad would join her later. I glanced at my watch. Hopefully, Nadia and Kristen wouldn't linger long after Dad left.
This place is a dive, Dad echoed Nadia, but the square footage is exactly what you need. All this place needs is a little TLC.
And a sledgehammer. Nadia moved back into the dining room. Did you inspect the property before you signed the papers?
I looked around.
You looked around?
Nadia swore. Don't get me wrong, I'm thrilled for you. Your restaurant will be great, but they are a high risk for failure.
She gave my dad an apologetic look, and he waved off the comment before she looked back at me. You can't make rash decisions. She pointed at the water stains on the wood paneling. Did you ask how the leak happened?
No.
I huffed impatiently. Joe said the place would need a lot of work.
You think?
This place needs to be gutted, and who knows what's lurking behind those walls?
Her gaze jumped from one spot to another, assessing details my amateur eyes didn't see.
You should have called. I would have done a walkthrough so you'd have an idea of what you were getting yourself into. Remodels add up quickly, and before you know, you're over budget or worse, out of cash.
Did you look at other sites to compare?
Why?
This place is rent-free.
Nadia blinked.
What?
Dad whistled.
Damn, girl,
muttered Kristen, who'd been playing with the cash register. It dinged.
For how long?
Nadia asked, suspicious.
As long as the remodel takes, no payments until opening day.
Her mouth fell open.
It's a pretty sweet deal. I like this place.
It was full of memories. Dad's mouth curved upward. He knew this place was special to me. Outside the windows, I saw the same view James and I had seen every time we dined. Mothers pushing strollers, cars passing, the occasional bicyclist dodging traffic. It was pouring now, the season's first storm. I looked at my watch again.
Nadia launched her tablet and sat in the nearest chair. She tapped notes on a virtual keyboard.
Do you know what you want to do with this site?
Kristen looked at me expectantly and sat in a chair beside Nadia. Dad shuffled closer.
I grinned. I have tons of ideas, like baking amazing desserts to go with my custom coffees.
What are you going to call your cafe? Kristen asked.
Amy's, I announced, and pulled the logo sketch from my portfolio. I placed it on the table. All three leaned in to look. Slow-brewed coffees and gourmet eatery. I love it.
Kristen patted my shoulder.
Nadia typed notes. Off the top of my head, build-out won't be cheap. After construction, permits, insurance, furniture, employee wages, plus your own cost of living.
Relax. Don't worry, I interjected and started rubbing Nadia's shoulders.
I'll spend wisely.
Good. You can start with me. As promised, I won't charge you, but I'll get the best prices I can manage through my connections for all the other stuff.
You have to let me pay you something.
She laughed.
I didn't say I was free, baby.
A large grin curved across her face.
I'm almost afraid to ask, I muttered.
She twisted in her seat and held out her hand.
I want a lifetime of free coffee and your lemon scones, too.
I laughed outright, shaking her hand. Deal. So, how long will the transformation take?
She pursed her lips and hummed. Consider yourself lucky if you can open in 8 months.
I whistled. That's a long time.
I was anxious to break ground. Unconsciously, I looked at my watch again.
Kristen nudged me and nodded at my watch. Going somewhere?
I shook my head. I'm expecting someone.
Who?
My face heated.